This interview is with Louis Barron, and it is August 3rd, 2015. So Elizabeth Monroe is doing the interview, and we're north of Athabasca at near a place called Saudi. So when did you come to Athabasca, Louis?
I came to Athabasca really in 1959, and I was in Edmonton when I came from north with my wife and her oldest daughter. We came to Athabasca to visit uncle. And we had coffee at the Union Hotel. And we're talking away with uncle and everything. And George Weldon was living in Saudi here, was farming, and he was a counselor. And he needed help on the farm to feed the cattle, the pigs, everything they had in farming. And uncle introduced us to him because he was looking for a couple to stay there and farm. And he came and talked to us, and I accept the deal. And we moved here in Saudi in the 60s, and that house there still in the field from Danielle Goodwin was there, and we lived there and farmed for George for about a year. Then I bought this two-quarter here, the homestead I am, the home place, and the other one north. And a year after, I came and built the first house, open land, horses, and break the land. And that's the way we started here in Saudi. In 1963, I bought three milking cows and a bred sow at a sale at Frank Delaska. And that's the way we started here, and we cleared 20 acres in that year. We opened by hand too, and everything, and then we got chicken and kept on opening land and working. Yeah. And then in the fall, I went to logging camp for Rapians first, North Collin Lake. And when they saw their people get mixed up today with the red rot lumber, they call it. Mm-hmm. It was red inside the pine, mm-hmm. but it was good lumber. And in the spring, I got 5,000 board feet from them for nothing. They used to give it away back then. And I paid Bernard Allen, was all in lumber for them. Mm-hmm. And I asked him how much he would charge me to bring that home in the spring. He said, you pay me for the gas. And that's what I did. And in the camp, there was lots of people I know, and we load that truck by hand, mm-hmm. one by one piece, 5,000 board feet. Mm-hmm. They brought it here, unloaded. I used that for the floor in the house and putting up building for the animals and everything. And Swanberg store in Saudi used to buy recycling windows, door when they demolish houses in town. And back then, I got pictures of that first house, and the window and the door cost me, I think, $10 back then. That was four nice big windows with a frame and the door. And got that and built the first house and everything. And then we clear a patch here for the garden, still working for 54 years ago, still the same place, producing good. And life kept on going like that till we came up today. Yeah. And then I made good in logging camp too, was in 70. Louis Newberry, I got a hold of him. Ask him how much it would cost to clear 80 acres with a cat back then. Yeah. He had a D7. He came and looked at it. He said $2,000. No, that was easy. He came and opened all the land here on the home place. And right behind, I broke it all too with the horses and the breaking plow. I still have the plow. And that's the way we improve the land and everything in the place in all the years.
Yeah.
That's 54 years. Yeah.
Wow.
And everything here, the house, all the building, I built all that myself too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Alice used to do canning and everything like most women did and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And raise We raise 5 children. We raise 6, really. We adopted 1. And everything today, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Good. It's, I think it was a dream, too, leaving home. I left home. I was young, working for other people before that. And it was a dream, you know, to get a place and build a house and get married and everything. Yeah. It's an ambition, too, that a person had.
So where did you grow up?
I was born in Montreal, and my parents moved west from there. I remember the second time in the 30 St. Rose, they called that place, was a pretty modern place already. And when the Second World War came, there was priests from Alberta, used to go down east, we call, and gather lots of people to leave there, sell their place and everything, and move to Peace River District to open the country. And Pioneer, they call them in English. They had different name in French. And already the war was almost starting. And then that they sold everything and moved to Donley. That's Peace River District.
Oh, yeah.
Peavine. And they took a homestead there for $10 for the whole quarter. Anyway, it started there. And I don't remember going to school there. I had only a few years of schooling, I think. But anyway, Emmy was a mechanic too by trade and everything and steam. And then they got the homestead. They had to open 10 acres, I think, and build a cabin and all of that. They did that. And after a couple of years, you know, leaving a nice place and coming in the bush, it was pretty hard on lots of them pioneers. They went back, but they went back to Fawcett, they call the place, was close to Ottawa, Ontario. And another thing there too, worked there for a year or 18 months. In the winter time, my oldest brother, me and neighbors and dad, we went to work on the railroad. We had to shovel snow on them section and everything back then. And shoveling coal for the steam engine. They used to pile that up in big piles. And, you know, that went on for about 18 months. And then they came back because they had the homestead. You had to follow the rules and everything. They did that. Then they came back. And they stayed for quite a while. Then I left home like I was 14 going up. And then worked for farmers and everything, and then worked for those Catholic school because they had a big farm and I used to like that there. What I had there, the job, milking cows and pigs and chicken, I had to look after all of that. At 18, I was managing already a farm for them because I had quite a bit of experience already in those days. And they left. I went at Groard first. $60 a month with room and board back then. But it was good. And then I worked there for a year and a half, got a letter from Sturgeon Lake. They started a new development, their school. Go and work over there, but for more money, $125 a month. Boy, that was good money for me and saving it every month. I had no expense. And then I worked there too, build there lots of buildings and everything. And I stayed there till 1949, got a letter from St. Albert, Uville home. And I went there and worked just on the dairy cattle, milking cows and that. Stayed there for a while. In 51, they went back to Ontario North, so St. Marie. Thunder Bay, I think they used to call. That's where I went to work in the blacksmith shop in the wintertime. Got a job in there. And that's where I learned trimming and shoeing horses. And they used to do thousands of that thing from square nail to plows. And I learned all of that. And after that winter in the spring, I came back here when I bought the place here. And that's where I made my living. And still working out while I was here. Then I run grader for the county and different job back then for almost 18 years. And then I stay home and farm after that. Yeah.
When did you meet your wife?
I met my wife when I worked at Wabasco at the school. She was working in there. That's where she learned. Those school, when she finished grade 8, they learned like cooking with biomex, they called cooking, making bread, sewing, netting, everything.
Yeah.
And then when she was 20, I remember there, she used to teach all of them. There was 8 of them working in there. And they used to teach the young kids the same thing, sewing, crochet, netting, and the cooking and everything.
Yeah.
And that was a good experience when we moved here because she knew already canning and cooking and everything. And myself, what I learned, working out for me, because education was never my life, I mean. But the learning like that, even today, it's better for me to learn with other people and everything. Even today now, from the young one to the oldest, because everything changed and different idea and all of that. And then people come in today, how they used to make butter years ago. Well, of course, we used to drive to town with horses here before, wood wheel wagon. I said, Mom, make sure we had 4 or 5 quart of cream full. And the kids, they're sitting in a wagon. The road was so rough, 16 miles to go to town one way and back. I said, they're shaking the cream and that. By the time we come back, 7 hours after, the butter was made.
Yeah.
And then they didn't have a butter churn that like today. Yeah.
So how long did it take to get to town?
It took me, that's only about 10 years ago, my last trip to town. I did it quite a few times. With the bigger horses, it took me 3.5 hours walking. That's about 4 miles an hour. Yeah.
It's a long way.
Yeah. And then in the winter time, the town used to ask me, they had winter carnival and that. And lots of time I used to load up the sleigh on the wagon and drive to town on the hook there, and people help to put the rock on the sleigh, and we used to give right on the river and everything for the people. Yeah. And then parades, and I did for 47 years.
Yeah.
Rides, parade. And then myself, I used to go lots to horse shows and plowing match, walking, plowing, everything. Still like to do that,
So how many horses would you have?
Me here, I raise here, we had 10 milking cows. Yes, was in the 70s when I bought a neighbor, 10 milking cows built on a lean to the barn. And we milked 10 cows and the calf. We had 20 head of cattle. I raised up to 16 horses for quite a few years and trained them and sell them and everything. Yeah.
So were they all draft horses?
Yeah, they were pretty well draft horses that I kept, but the kids used to ride them, the smaller one. But I trained lots of horses for other people too, riding horses. Yeah. And even the riding horses, they were trained in a harness too for buggies and everything. And that.
Yeah.
In 78, that's when I start to do a harness too, because nobody around here was doing it, and for me to buy was expensive then too. And that's where I learned to do a harness and everything, and today still doing.
So how did you learn to do a harness?
What I did, I took a harness I had already. I bought a team of horses. My first horses I bought, they came from Baptist Lake. I rode them from there here, 25 miles. And I bought a set of harness from a neighbor that time for $50. And then they had colt every year, start raising them and shorting a harness. Then I took that harness, measure it, bought leather in Edmonton, find a place. And then that's when I started doing my harness.
Yeah.
Sew them by hand first. Yeah. And then I did bought a machine from Denmark, 1980, a small one. And then at Elscott, Alan Weigel, his name is. That big machine I got there, a Pearson, they call it, I bought it from him. He wanted quite a bit money back then, but it didn't work very good. It used to miss stitching and everything. I went back to him a few months after, and I told him I had $2,000 I had to pay that back then.
Yeah.
And I said, it's not working good and everything. He agreed with the money. I brought it home. I worked on it. It took me 3-4 days, and somehow I managed to find out the adjustment for stitching and everything, and that machine still working.
Yeah.
That machine here, his dad was a shoemaker. He had it. That's 40 years almost. I got the machine here.
Yeah.
His dad had it. That machine is close to 100-year-old.
Yeah.
And it's still working. Yeah. Then I bought one 2 years ago. I repaired it. I made part for them. Some part I could make it. And then I sold it. People, they came and look at it and sold it and made a few dollars out of it and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you find out about these machines? Like something in Elscott? How would you find out
about
that?
I was in town and, you know, go to town, meet people at coffee and ask them if they know somebody had machine and everything. They said, yeah, this Alan at Elscott, his daddy had a shoe shop and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Went to see him. Yeah. Word of mouth, like they call it.
Yeah.
And then, like for the harnesses, I went to Big Horse Show and asked people in there. Some at Millet used to make harnesses because they had papered horses. And then, you know, back then, still people didn't like to give you the address where they're buying the hardware, the letter, because it was like a competition. It would have been. Yeah. But for me, it was not, because I had already 14 horses. And to work in the field, I needed 4 sets of harness for 8 horses, because I used to put 4, like breaking land or some hard work to pull equipment and everything. And then a little bit I go there, but my eyes, they used to look all over like a computer today. It reminded my head, a catalog, where to get. That's the way I find out the catalogs here and there. And the phone, you have to have a business. The funniest part for me, when I start with the Amish 28 years ago, I phoned. I wanted a catalog. He said, yeah. He said, where you live? Gave him my place, everything, in box number and code. And he said to me, you got a business name. Well, I didn't know what to say. I'm on the farm.
Yeah.
But he said, could you wait a minute? He said, I got another phone call and he had to take it. It was from Europe. Yeah, my mind came, yes, Baron Harness. And then I gave him the name. Then I got the catalog, because then they sell wholesale, because you got to buy so much. And that's the way I started with them. And I've been with them all the time. And I buy the top leather and hardware and everything. And they're really good to deal with. They're honest and never had problem with them, you know. Yeah.
So the horses, how long could they work in the day?
Me here, you know, till last spring. This spring I lost my last horse age. He was 26. In here, I had a tractor, but the tractor I had was made, I use it for trashing, crushing grain and that, because I had a pulley. But all the work in the field, there was days here, especially at the end, before Alice passed away there, some day work 14, 15 hours a day too, because, you know, it was way of life. But I had lots of them. If I was cutting hay, for example, I would change every 4 hours and take fresh one, because today, you know, I know it's the what I do here in one day, they could do it in 1 hour. But back in those days, it was not the idea. Myself, I work up to 25 acres a day, because I had enough horsepower, keep changing, and you get more speed.
Fresh,
Exactly. And like baling hay. I did bale. I rig a baler, pull it with the horses. I don't need the tractor really if it comes down to it. But after I bale hay and finish, if I start at 11 in the morning, finish at 6, 7, I used to come in for lunch, horses having a lunch, hook them back on the big trailer I had and go and pick up square bale till 10 o'clock, 10:30. When the dew come, then I used to quit. And it was 16 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then today, people have to realize there's young people. I'm helping them now with the big team in the harness. We plow here and we plow garden this spring. But if you're going to work in the field, you're looking in a day, you're walking 30 miles a day, and you don't realize it because you go half a mile long all day long, you know. And
just focus on what you're doing. And
And today, that's why the tractor came in a lot easier for the people because the walking, like you say, it's... But for me, even today now, these plowing, much like the team now that I go and help, it's a funny thing, you know, I still could walk behind all day long behind that plow. It's so nice to see.
Yeah.
It's part of life.
Well, you see the results as you're doing it too, you know.
And then I went there in May, and the first time teach them to skid trees out the wood. And there they had big trees, but it's down a bank. Yeah. There was a main road, but it's down the bank. And I remember they phoned me, take this five-year-old, but they're big. They weigh 1,900 pounds. The horse stop on top, kind of wary to go down, but coax it. It's going down the road, slow. We skid there that day, and we'll be going back again, I think, around September and get some more up. And coming up the hill, the horses, they're pretty smart. Yeah. You get in the bush and... I'll take picture of that. They could do whatever you want.
Well, I sort of think they like the challenge of it.
Yes. You know, like, to take a horse, like, if that's what you like, it don't matter. Like, you know, cowboy horse, they call roping and everything. You like to do it. The horse like to do it. You could do whatever you want with the horse. There's no such a thing that he's not going to do it. He know you know him, and you both work together. There's nothing you could do, everything that you want with the horse. And that's why here, loading logs on them big sleigh, well, I learned when I was young in logging camp, because I did work lots logging camp. And like I say, for me, that was big learning.
Yeah.
And even today... my daughter's got horses. I hope next year they're going to be here, because there's a young team, the Colts, they were here. I'll train them
and
work them in the field and everything. Yeah.
So do your kids live nearby, or have they moved different places? And...
To live?
Yeah.
No, always here. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. Then they've got family close
by. And even another thing here, now, the grandchildren really had another house in town that was in the 80s. The Catholic Church built a new rectory for the priest there, they call, and they had the old house on top back, built in 1900, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Three-story high. Yeah. And it was built strong. Anyway, town government and other people, they were kind of counselor there for the church, and they approached me and they asked me if I wanted to tear the building down. Because back in those days, they would have to pay somebody to tear it down, bring the lumber to the scrap place, whatever, and burn it and everything. Well, I said, I'll take the challenge. But I said, you got to give me time. They said, okay, go there, take the roof. And it was built, man, pretty strong. Anyway, I was helping farmers around here, Earl Nelson. And he had a big trailer already and a tractor with a loader on it. It was handy. What I did, I took all the partition out, take the power socket, all the walls by the floor. Everything collapsed down to the ground. At night after work from his place to town was half an hour drive with the tractor. He said, he gave me the tractor. I load up and haul all the material here. and then take everything apart and build another house. And then we had 4 bedrooms and everything, more modern than the first one. And the grandchildren, when the mother, my daughter or the son got married, they live here, and the kids, they were 2, 3 years old, and then they had a good job, find a place to live in. And the kids, they were raised here, but today, everybody gathers 2, 3 times, a big family gathering. Yeah. But we do sporting. Mm-hmm. My grandchildren learn, they know, people say hard work, but I don't see it like that. But we're still cutting wood with the cross cuts and everything, and that's what they like. They call it lumberjack contest, strongman competition. Who would do the most than the other one? And in July here, there was 22 of them came, even friends and everything from the city. And they like it. They come and take a challenge, even splitting wood, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we do all of that 2, 3 times a year. Yeah.
That's
great.
So what did you do if when you weren't working? Or did you work all the time?
I work all the time.
Yeah.
Even today. Now I'm doing this hobby. I just finished that furniture store. Not quite finished.
Yeah. So when did you start making these buildings and that?
Oh, okay, that little stagecoach over there, before I got married at Wabasca there, that's where I started that. First, when I was young, my dad used to cut toys for the boys.
Oh, yeah.
And a relation, they were all farmers on dad's side, even mom, really. And anyway, my dad, when I was young, he used to cut me wood horses out. Mm-hmm. And on a board and wheel, used to pull it in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
Got older, even 10-year-old, 12, got with a neighbor, he had some too. We made our own harnesses with string. Hooked them, made a little wagon, cut a tree and little wheels out of it. And we did everything, pulling grass, loader up. I guess everybody's born with talent, whatever they got. Yeah. And that's something that came up too. And then the more I've been doing things now, like I said, my internet is full, but the keyboards are broken.
Yeah.
It keeps building up. I finish one, I got something else doing coming on.
Yeah. So do you do that mostly in the winter or just all year round?
Even now I'm doing that. Yeah. I call between showers and doing a harness. I want to finish now. And then in the fall, I got 3 sets of harness to do, people beside all the crafts and different things.
Yeah, well, that's great.
I got to keep busy, and then I want to build another big sleigh for horses.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got the material for them.
Yeah, well, you know how to do lots of things, so.
Yeah.
So then you get variety in what you're doing.
It's
not the same
and
thing.
And what
time,
it's nice, you know, people phone, go down for coffee and talk in exchange. I got few videotape, and some people were still interested. You know, it's like a fever. I had number one horses here, but it's funny, it's somebody else's horse. I got DVD here, these plowing match and whatever. Man, I said, gee, if I had that thing telling the friend, you know, I still would be doing it today, but I still could get a team and do it. The only thing for me now today, it's not hard, but if I want to go someplace, you know, the children, they have their life to live and everything. And sure, they would come and do the chore, but if I'm gone for a week, they're out for months working, there's nobody to come and look after them. That's the only thing getting in the age, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I like to go and help some people I know with them and still driving the horses and enjoying the scene.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But not the.
No, not steady like it used to be day to day.
It's good though, because then you don't miss it as much as you would. If you just had to stop and not.
A time comes, the person's going to enjoy their rest of it.
So, what kind of special event, like, tell me about the year. What big events would there be? Would there be things in the fall, like at harvest season?
That was big, that, because while I got video here and still cutting with the horses, Real Boisvert, you know, met people like DC, it's a small world. Even years ago, used to go to horse show. Well, I started in town, I have some 2, 3 year old, you know, and people come and see the horses. I like to decorate them. I said it was like Alice, you know. I could have bought her everything to look good. The horse, man, it was the second thing to look pretty. You go to show, everybody comes and talking. Then we met him, and my life was still like it was before, but him never run a binder. And he phoned me, was in August. He said, when are you going to cut grain right here? Well, I said, in a couple of weeks. Well, he said, phone me. I like to come and learn how to run the binder. And then he came, and I had a young horse I trained already 2-3 months before and put him on the binder with the other one. Boy, when we turned the corner, the horse, he wanted to go, like we called, but I know him hanging on. And we cut grain with them horses. And that was a big oven. And then we gave them a break. We stop and we go stooking. But them horses learned to stand there. They would never move till you tell them to go. And we did this 25-acre field in 18 hours. Not all day, but... And we did it and stook it. And then trashing, that's a big oven. Everybody used to like to come in.
Where did you sell the grain? Did you use it here or...
Use it here. And then I used to go out and help people to how to get everything going. We used to do it all here. And then one fall in the late 90s, university here at Athabasca, they work with the states down the main, especially. Student from grade 12 university. They had a bus tour, they call. There was 27, the crew and the people, 20 students, I think, with Harvey Scott. Harvey Scott phoned me. They wanted to see how Alberta the life lived.
Yeah.
And a student, they came here anyway. And I cut grain down the hill there. There's a 20-acre field. And we didn't, it was not stook. I just cut it the day before he phoned me. Yeah. And they came here, we went down there and teach the kids how to stook.
Yeah.
And they really love it. We stook everything that day and we did different things. And the next day I said, we're trashing. Well, that was something they wanted to see. And then we set up the trashing machine, took the horses, the wagon, we went loading. And we trashed some grain here. And then after, we had quite a straw pile, about 30 feet high. Mm-hmm. And years ago, where we used to trash home and then go and help other farmers. In the fall, a lot of farmers, when they finished, straw pile was 40 feet high, lots of places. They had a ladder and they go up and they put a $50 bill on top of the straw pile. Now, if everybody could climb to get the money, that's yours. Well, here... The student came after we finished trashing. I got a video on that. And it's pretty hard to get on top. You climbing, everything slide down. And we had lots of fun on all of that. But there's still people doing it, like in fairs and even around here, you know. Yeah. People like to go and pitch bundle and everything. Yeah. Something of the past. But Saskatchewan... Manitoba, lots of area there, it's still pretty big. Yeah, they get the biggest trashing now was 40-some machine all at once. But they trash and the grain go for the food bank.
Farmers, they
gave it away. Yeah. But then, you know, there's thousands of people going there because even the little kids like to go and go in the field pitching here and there and stoking something that they like to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then same like in the bush in the winter time here, people like memory or memoir, their parents especially. There was a couple at Collington. Their dad was a logger and he died of cancer. And the son had smaller horses too. And somehow he approached me because here we still use wood, still using wood. And then we used to cut wood. And they came here with two teams in mind. And there was lots of snow that went through a couple of feet, but they wanted to go in the bush and log some trees out like their parents did.
We
organized everything, and Alice and the wife came and they cook and everything. We went down in the bush, big bonfire, all the kids, my kids, other one. And we had even ponies there in the bush, getting the smaller tree.
Yeah.
And the kids riding them in and out. And, that was going on for 4 days. So many things like that we used to do here, get everybody involved. And then with the agriculture, Agriplex, they call the place there. I did that with Tom and Mary Black. They were the managers of that there. And we had fair in the spring, but the fair back then, it was from the little kids, 6-7 year old, they could drive their pony. There was always something to do with them and up and saddle horse, same thing too to the heavy horse pull and everything and log skidding contest. We always had something to do and to go get everybody involved. And another thing about that shows, and I went lots driving them plaques, their trophies and ribbon, but it's to go to show myself, telling the lots of young people even today, my mind was never to win. It was to go show my horses what I could do with them, and the enjoyment, the people, the children to come and pet them, sit on their back, they take picture and everything. Money can buy that.
No, the horses like that too.
Oh man, the horses I had here, the more children they had their head down, they were the babysitter for them, you know.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
So where were the big horse shows that that you went to? Where would they have been?
Like, well, like myself, I used to go like all the small places first, right down to Edmonton, you know.
Yeah.
Because in Edmonton, back in those days, Klondike days, that was a big show, there. Because like you see, we started in the 70s. Every July there was horses from the States, Ontario, all over, beside Alberta and everything, and used to go there and compete, you know, just drive it. There was so many obstacles. That's where you learn the horses, the mind and everything. Every horse is different to people think. You know, horses, they're like the way mine, I was driving, everything. Not one is the same.
Yeah.
Some, they were obstacle. They had cage with a pig in it, sheep. And that, you have to go through and everything. Yeah. Some horses, man, they'll see a pig and a sheep, and they get scared, and they wouldn't move the other way. Yeah. And then when you drive in, you lose point, because your horse got to be calm and do all of that. And there was lots of learning with all of that, Even Westlock was a pretty big show there, too. People used to come from all over, UFA, 8 horses and everything, you know, Core Brewery, I was against them one time from Calgary, and I went team driving, and I had a farm wagon, I didn't have a show wagon. Yeah, but it was interesting, too. Because show horses, they're well trained in the crowd, parade, and everything. But to buy one and you bring it home, some people, while they come and say, oh, man, I bought this team and they're like this and like that. They have to be trained to work on the farm, because what they know, it's parade and everything. Sure, they do use them home and everything. But see, life on a farm, training a horse, you're going to break land and everything. That horse get used to everything, the noise and everything. It's a little different than a show horse, you see. That's something that people have to understand and realize. It's a different thing there.
The show stuff would be the
for fun. I remember mine in here. We never washed them before I'm going to parade and that, but we brush them, make sure they're clean and everything. But the first show in Edmonton, they got a washroom in there. While I go there with a big team of Belgium I had, and they weigh 2,000 pounds each. And while they said, here, you got to wash them. Man, you come there with the hose and the spray. They didn't like it. I said, they did lots of 2 steps, one of them, before he come down, you know. It was a learning experience.
That's what they're scared of, not
Oh, yes, they were scared of it, you know. And I said, they're going to learn talking to them a little bit. And, but they learned it. there was lots of it. And then provincial horse show in Edmonton in the fall, we used to go there, and we had two stalls, one for the horses, the other one for the feed and the harness, mm-hmm. and we used to sleep in the stall there too, because at night you never know.
Don't want to be too far from them.
Yeah, and we always had a little dog, and he used to be yappy all the time.
So, tell me about your neighbors.
Here, even today here now, we have young neighbors north from here. There was never before, but anyway, now there's new neighbors. They have two boys, young boys. They got to be 10-year-old now. Even today, the neighbor we got here, it's like in the past. They'll stop and, like I said, come and check on me. I'm alone here. And neighbors and even these phoning, what people do today for me, it's like it was in, before.
That's great.
And then we used to go to town. We never did lock the door. Lots of time I go and I forget to lock the door. Yep. I don't have to worry. But right now here, the neighbor, still 100%.
Yeah.
It don't matter what happened to me. If my kids are not here, I get hurt or something, they'll come here right away and bring me whatever I want to do in that.
That's great.
Yeah. Not only here, there's, like I say, lots of new people from McMurray move here, retired and everything, and they had horses and find out about me, even the way they're handling them or doing, like I say, machinery for the horses, sleigh, wagon. Not one is the same, but I travel lots. When I was young, like I said, you know, a lot of time I used to leave a place and they kind of felt bad because it was like one of the family. But I guess it was part of my life to move around to learn everything that I learned today and work a year, 18 months in one place, and that, well, I had to move and go and learn something else from, I say, from New Brunswick right down to BC.
And then you use it all here.
Yeah, and then I, like for me, what I'm doing now, like the machinery, that's why, especially with horses equipment and everything, I saw everything that I remember already in all my life, like I said, and I'm doing it big or small. And, because different roads and Newfoundland, for example, not only there, New Brunswick, well, Ontario was a bad place. Logging there where I learned BC hills, and there was lots to learn, the sleigh, how they were made, and brakes on it going downhill, because I never saw horses get it killed, but I heard people told me, I saw pictures of horses rolling in the snow because the load was too big and pushed the horses down, but I never saw it, but it was a pretty rough life. And then when we went to BC, Montney was 80 miles west of Fort St. John. My dad, oldest brother, me, some neighbors, there was seven of us. We went there anyway. Log shack, summertime, dry, woodpecker pick on the roof. The story there, man, you go to bed, they had airtight, you make a fire. You could be cooking when you go to bed. You get up in the morning, the water was frozen in the wash basin. But a month after, there's a young boy come in already back in those days in 70. Long hair. Wash his hair every night. He used to melt snow. And away he goes to bed, and his head was right against the log on the wall there. We didn't have headboard on the bed back then. And I said, every morning at 6 o'clock, the bell rang. We had to get up, just wash our face and go to him. He come to get up. His hair froze on the wall. Well, we laughed so much. I said, I took my pocket knife. I go there to cut his hair. And that you could even touch him. He said, my long hair. But I said, he stayed there for a month. They had to feed him till it thaw out. Oh, there was a lot of joke in that. And another thing, you know, in those days, after New Year's, we used to go back in the camp, January till April, break up. Nobody ever took a shower in the camp. We wash our face in, and that's it. We come out in the spring. I said, when we take a bath, it used to worth it. The water was gray by the time we finished work. And there was a man, we used to wear wool underwear back then, and he had a real hairy chest, and the hair grew through his underwear for the 3 months. Well, in the spring, he come out, and he could even take it off. He had to go to the barber shop first, and they shave him to take it off and wash.
I must have kept him warm, though.
Yeah.
So, your wife, did she have family here? Or
yes, in Athabasca. Yes, there was quite a few, in Collin Lee, Wabasco, And then back in those days, when I bought my first truck, was a 52 international truck. Anyway, it was in 62, 63. And back in those days, the road was not paved. Collin Lee had at 813, there was no road to go to Wabasca. From Athabasca to go and visit the grandparents to Wabasca, there, 8-hour drive to Slave Lake back then.
Yeah.
Well, you know, used to go 30, 40 kilometers an hour because the road used to be dirt and gravel. But we made it. There was no rush, like I said, today.
It's a beautiful country to be driving through,
Don't
get tired of looking at it.
Even here, we go here where, well, from the house here, it's 3/4 mile away from the river. I walked there a couple of weeks ago with some people, came and picked Saskatoon. On top, there's a point there. That's so nice. You sit there and the river flow in the bottom and everything. Yeah. It's a nice country.
It is beautiful.
Even this, when we move here, when I built the first house, was just a trail. That's the Peace River Trail here. Mm-hmm. We came to borrow a wagon and a tractor from a neighbor and haul logs here and cut a hole down here and build the first house.
So what did you do? What was Christmas like? Was it a big celebration or not a big celebration? Christmas?
Oh, yes, it's big here. Everybody comes and cooking and everything. And Mark, my son here, he got half a quarter of land from me. Mm-hmm. And there's a bank there. We clean all that up and everything. Yeah, we go. We used to go for sleigh ride and sliding and a big winter horse and everything. Yeah. There's up to 30 people will come for Christmas. Oh, every year we still celebrate everything outside. Yeah. Everybody. And now the grandchildren would sport, they got them snowboarding and skis.
Yeah.
And, the extreme, they say, they going to do this and that. No, we still do quite a bit sport. Yeah. And skating, too.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty strong, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The grandchildren and everything. Yeah. They got a skating ring there in that big pond and everything.
Oh,
And all the kids get together, everybody. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Makes the winter not seem so long.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's always, every month here, you know, there's always something to do, really. Everybody gets together, and there's so many different games, too, that come up now, outside games and everything. They do all kinds of games. And what my daughter-in-law is going to do, well, I know today, people, like what I'm doing now, I'm passing it on, like them people, phone now, everything, leather work, everything. They want to come with their cell phone and take pictures the way I'm doing it with the tools I have. I don't have any modern tools, nothing of it. And they're going to make a whole DVD or something out of it because it's a dying art now. There's lots of that today. That's why I get lots of young people involved to teach them to do with what I got here, not with modern tools and everything. And yet you still could do it.
I keep thinking of you saying, you know, people used to just make do with what they had.
Yes.
They found a way to do it with what they had.
Yeah.
So at my house, I'm saying, what do I have that I could do this with?
Well, you see, like myself, here, people come in. I made a miniature two-seater buggy here. And the wheels, they're from a baby carriage wheel. Me, I go to the Friendship Center, the thrift store, buy stuff. Get the wheel, whatever.
Yeah.
Now, the pole on it, it's curved two ways. I don't cut it out of a wood. I went in a bush. I find that crooked tree looks what I want. And I square it like I... That's what I'm still doing yet. But that's what I'm teaching my grandchildren. Yeah. You go in a bush, you're going to find that there. How to bend it and everything when it's green. You make the jig. Because like I say, I learned it. I remember when I was, I learned it. Then after a while, I didn't do as much, but still, I still remember. Now I got time to do it.
And it's just
And with the leather, like myself, I don't need $200,000 worth of machinery to do what I'm doing. And I do my own design. I cut it with a knife, and then sew it and everything. And like you say, to me, the philosophy is to make a living. You still could make a living today if you want to live, have it good and everything. I had it good. Even the land I got and everything, I still could make a living today. Because anything happened, the power goes up for 10, 12 hours, like one to 10 a year ago or so. Yeah. I don't even know here. Yeah. I got the wood stove going and everything, yeah. And still, you know, to make a living. I got everything.
And you know, I got running water. You know how to do.
Exactly, yeah.
But you're also used to thinking about how would I do this.
Yeah, and then I know today there's so many things. But myself, it don't matter if I got to go down the hill and get water on the big pond with a stone boat and a barrel. When I started, we used to go half a mile to the creek and all the water here before I dig the first well by hand. I mean, my life today is no different than the past, but I'm still living good today, even the modern living and everything. Yeah. I got no problem with that. The kids helped me lots too. Well, not only them, but, well, go to a Michael's store there, they got everything made. It's not the point. What I make, it's a different feeling than buy it ready made and put it in the building. I learned to make it years ago and I still could do it, and I feel better that way than, you know. Another thing, for me, I would have to spend over $20,000 if I had to buy everything to do what I'm doing.
You're used to thinking about how can I do it?
You know? Yeah.
How can I do it? How can I buy it to do it? But how can I do it?
Yeah. But see, like me, like with the recycling, I have no scale. Like I said, I'll take a little tree and I cut little chairs out of it. And like you said, the mind, and the more I'm doing it, the better I get at it. And then people tell to me, and they tell me, even my grandchildren, everything, well, that now I'm going to build a saloon. Well, I start already after this. Got to have a hotel. And then I go to this place, and people come along. Oh, there's lady upstairs in the window looking down at the men and everything. They're telling me words, you know. Now that's what it's coming next. And a street light. I start already, go to a garage sale, but a little cat motor miniature. Well, that's going to go in the power plant to supply power in the town.
Yeah.
The mine always work on that.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed it. I've been learning about different.
Well, there's lots, like you say, yes, later, like to learn. Yeah, you asked me, because, like I said, there's so much. You know, when I get together with people, man, it could go for hours.
Yeah.
And pass it on, because that's the way young people learn, too. It's not just everybody today, it's easy for them to have something to do, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the important thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The following are notes on an interview held with Louis Barron on November 16, 2015. The actual recording of the interview didn't come through, so the interviewer, Elizabeth Monroe, has made notes on the interview and recorded them for the project. Louis talked first of all about what they raised on the farm. They raised chickens, ducks, and geese for eggs and meat. Louis still raises all of these birds. And in fact, when I spoke to him, he had just slaughtered them the week before, and they would start to raise new ones again in the spring. They would also have at least one bird sow on the farm. They would keep a few sucklings to raise and slaughter in the fall, and the rest they would sell for cash. They also had milk cows as time went on and the farm, and they sold the cream for cash. They needed very little cash, just for flour sugar, tea, a few things like that. They grew all the vegetables that the family would need. They knew how many plants they needed to grow for each person to last the year. 400 onion plants per person would last for the year, for example. Some might go bad and a person might not have an onion every day, but that growing that number would work out for the year. Alice Barron, Louis's wife, did lots of canning. She canned meat and produce to last the winter. I asked if there were winters that were especially hard, where they maybe went a little short at the end of winter. But Louis said that they were able to put away all the food they needed in the summer and they didn't get caught short. They also did some hunting and fishing. They caught grayling in the creek that is 6 miles east of Louis's current place. In the summer, they dug holes in the muskeg to store food, and it would stay fresh all summer. There was a lot more game there than there is today. They hunted grouse, prairie chicken, quail. We also talked about the routines for their work. Alice had taught the girls at the residential school where Louis and Alice had met about how to do different kinds of household work. There was a day for baking and a day for mending, for example. So when they started out together, they kept those routines when they had their own place and did baking on the same day each week and mending on the same day as before. And all the other work followed the same routines that they had when they worked at the school. There were small convenience stores, not very far from their place. One was 4 miles south. In the winter, they just went right across the fields to it. And there was a store 6 miles east so that they could get a few things they needed. People were honest, so you could pay for part of what you needed from the store and then pay the rest when the check for cream, for example, came in at the end of the month. If you did a job, you were often paid in kind. Louis told a story about helping a couple with framing and building a house near Collington, and they wouldn't have had the money to pay him, but gave him some bread sauce for the work. That was good for Louis and Alice. Louis built his house himself with neighbors helping. All the materials, the beams and logs, were cut by hand from his own land. The only material that wasn't was the paneling inside. They built things up gradually on the homestead. He was able to buy his first place because he had worked at the residential school at Wabasa. He hadn't had any expenses there. They gave him his meals and a place to stay, so he saved all his pay. Later on, when someone nearby was selling up near Louis and Alice's place, and Louis was still in the early stages with his farm, the neighbor got in touch with Louis and said he wanted to give him the first chance to buy his cows and his cream separator for $2,000. That was a really good price for what they were getting, but a lot of money for them. He and Alice talked it over and decided to go ahead. That made a big difference to them. When they got the cattle or other new livestock, he built onto the buildings that he already had or built another building to house the livestock. He did the same thing for his children, helping them out when they were getting started. He and Alice had built a bigger place but kept the first homestead and let each of the children live there when they were starting out until they could afford to have a place of their own. The house is heated using wood. It takes 4 cords of wood for the winter. With a chainsaw, it takes a day to cut. When they use hand saws, a few people would help and still cut the wood in a day. They would leave the wood in the bush through the winter and split it and leave it to dry. Later, they would move it to the house. Cutting wood was also something that people could do to raise some cash, and they were to get $20 a cord. Louis told a story of when he worked at the school, of two men agreeing to the price for some wood. Someone was buying wood on behalf of the school. And the man buying the wood said that a cord was the amount of wood measured to a man's armpit. The man who was buying the wood was a tall man, though. He was 6'6". And the man selling the wood was a much shorter man, maybe 4'6". So when Louis went to pay the seller on behalf of the school, there wasn't nearly enough wood. So the seller argued that this is what he had been told, but Louis convinced him that there needed to be a little more for things to be right. So those were the stories that Louis told me in the second interview, fit in with what he had told me in the first interview in the summer of 2015.